This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Hop on board with Bumper to Bumper, our program about automotive news and all things roadworthy. With sources like Car and Driver, Popular Mechanics, and Motor Trend, you'll be in the driver's seat. Classic, vintage, sporty, or modern, you'll hear it here. Automotive news and all that's roadworthy, it's Bumper to Bumper, coming up next on your audio reading service.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Bumper to Bumper. I am your reader, J.J. Fabini, with the audio reading service, part of the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Here on Bumper to Bumper, we cover all things automotive-related, particularly from Car and Driver and MotorTrend.com. We'll start today at CarandDriver.com, copyright 2025 Hurst Autos Incorporated, and a test of the 2025 Porsche 911 Carrera GTS Cabriolet. Vroom with a view. The big news is its hybrid power plant, but you would never know if we hadn't told you. And this is reviewed by Alana Schur. It was a grim and cloudy day in 1903 when astronomer George Hale made the arduous hike up the San Gabriel Mountains to Wilson's Peak, to find a location for his proposed observatory. Hale found the weather unpromising at the base of the mountain, socked in and viewless. But then, halfway up the trail, he broke through the clouds and discovered blue sky and the promise of stars above. We had a similar experience in the 2025 911 Carrera GTS Cabriolet. Following Hale's path up Forest Route 2N24, which is now paved, thankfully, through the pine trees on a disappointingly cloudy day. Just when it seemed that the car's black fabric top would stay hopelessly undropped, we blew through a few last whiffs and into the fir-scented sunshine of the Angeles National Forest. Since the GTS Cabriolet can lower its lid in 12 seconds while traveling at speeds up to 31 miles per hour, we didn't even have to pull over to make the Porsche into our own mobile observatory. We've already tested the Carrera GTS Coupe, so it's not surprising news that the convertible version accelerates like a shooting star and follows a given trajectory with the accuracy of an asteroid caught in a gravitational pull. There is no need to use Kepler's third law of motion to calculate the Carrera's mass. It fits easily on our scales. The convertible weighs 3,819 pounds. 181 more than the coupe that we've tested, but it still manages a 60-mile-per-hour time below 3 seconds at 2.9 and clicks off a 11-second quarter-mile pass at 129 miles per hour. What might be surprising to Porsche fans not totally up on their power plant news is that the 2025 GTS introduced a new hybrid combination to rocket the 992.2 generation 911 out of the atmosphere. There's no fully electric driving mode. The hybridization is mostly for performance. And at 19 mpg, the EPA combined rating has not budged from that of the previous twin-turbo GTS. Performance, though, it has got. The tire-melting propulsion is now a team effort between the single-turbo 3.6-liter flat-six and an electric motor built into the 8-speed dual-clutch transaxle. Porsche went big on the engine, boring and stroking the block up from the previous 3 liters. On its own, the engine puts out 478 ponies, but it gets a power shot from the electric motor, which can supply a 64-horsepower burst for 10 seconds when you hit the sport response button. Less gimmicky is the 53 extra ponies the motor provides at all times during regular driving. That gives GTS owners 532 horsepower and 449 pound-feet of torque at the ready. Porsche says the electric motor, which works in place of a starter, also makes for quicker auto-stop start fire-ups as well as better passing power. We didn't notice the startups seeming faster, but once you're running, there's no turbo lag at all when you put the pedal down. The turbo has its own electric motor integrated into the housing to quickly build boost, and it doubles as a generator to charge a 0.9 kilowatt-hour lithium-ion battery in the Carrera's nose. Not only will the 911 speed accelerate quickly, but it'll also come back down in a hurry too. In our 70 mile per hour stopping test, the GTS came to a halt in 139 feet. From 100 miles per hour, it was 274 feet. Tester Dan Edmonds notes under braking were fade, none, let's keep going. That's kind of the theme when behind the wheel. It's a pleasure to captain such a responsive and unflappable machine. The Carrera GTS Cabriolet is available with all-wheel drive, but we found that the rear-wheel drive convertible gave us the right mix of stability and spice. Few manufacturers have steering feel as crisp and well-weighted as the Porsche. And the standard rear-wheel steering adds a little maneuvering help in tight corners. On the skid pad, the GTS pulls 1.02 Gs, drawing a tight circle of rubber with its Goodyear Eagle F1 Supersport R summer tires at 245/35ZR20s in the front and 315/30ZR21s in the rear. On our car, the staggered rubber was mounted on a new wheel design for 2025, a double five spoke with carbon fiber surrounds whose aero wheel aesthetics accentuate the hybrid nature of the GTS. But other designs are available, including a center lock option. When it comes to options, it is well worth the $2,980 for the front axle lift, because the GTS sits low enough that every driveway is a possible front splitter. Happily, the nose lift pops the snout skyward in just seconds. To make daily driving even easier, it can keep multiple locations in its GPS-based memory. So it's up and over your driveway, that raised train track on Main Street, and the speed bump in the office parking lot without even having to press a button. Another option that we would consider might seem like a downgrade, the GTS Suspension Delete. It subs in the softer anti-roll bars of the Carrera S and raises the ride height by 0.4 inch. Porsche's GTS trims have been getting steadily firmer over the years, and while the Cabriolet feels amazing on the smooth surfaces of the test track and when whipping around corners above the clouds, banging along in traffic is a scenario where only one's chiropractor benefits. The choice may come down to whether the Carrera is going to be the buyer's main ride or a weekend toy. Hybridization is the big news for the GTS, but there are a few other changes that might not be immediately noticeable to any but the Porsche faithful. The GTS maintains the 911's instantly recognizable profile and cheerful wide-eyed headlights, but new bumpers house active shutters across the front end that give it a baleen whale grin. Inside, coupe models are two-seaters only. There's no puppy perch back seat unless you option it at no extra cost, though Targa and Cabriolet trims come standard with rear accommodations. The ignition key is now a push button, albeit still to the left of the steering wheel, and the gauge cluster is an all-digital affair. It's not as romantic as seeing a physical needle climb the rev counter, but it is clear, easy to read, and adjustable with the toggle on the steering wheel. One fun detail is that in the cluster's track mode, the center readout becomes a tack, clocked to put the red line at top dead center, just like in a vintage race car. A 10.9-inch infotainment screen above the nubby shifter offers camera views, hybrid settings, navigation, and entertainment options. It's a small screen by modern standards, but it acts as a reminder that in this car, you're supposed to be looking out the window at upcoming curves, not scrolling through podcasts. The same logic could be applied to the rest of the interior, which would be minimalist to the point of boredom, were the car itself not so much fun. Some of that may have been because of the spec of our test car, which lacked the excitement of some of Porsche's hotter paint options. In ice gray metallic over dark night blue with chalk stitching, our GTS wore the color palette of a junior investment banker's best meeting suit. Good if you're angling for a promotion, less so if you want to stand out at the local morning meetup. That said, one might need a job in finance to afford the GTS. As equipped, and ours was not heavy on options, our test car would drain $194,655 out of your portfolio. It is an astronomical price, but possibly worth it for a car that straightens out every curve on a mountain road and gives you an unobstructed view all the way to the top. Eyes of the 2025 Porsche 911 Carrera GTS Cabriolet. Seriously speedy, fast-acting nose lift, and needle-sharp handling. The lows: uninteresting interior, harsh ride, and sky-high price. The verdict: hard to beat, except by the hard top. Next, from CarAndDriver.com, the 2026 Hyundai Ioniq 5 costs up to $9,800 less than last year. Just as the federal EV tax credit ends, Hyundai slashes prices across the Ioniq 5 lineup for 2026, bringing the base price to just $36,600. This is written by Caleb Miller. Hyundai announced pricing of the 2026 Ioniq 5, with starting prices way down by up to $9,800. September 30th marked the final day of the $7,500 federal EV tax credit, and unsurprisingly, EV sales surged in September as buyers looked to cash in on the deal before its demise. The Hyundai Ioniq 5 was among the biggest benefactors, with its September sales up 152% compared with the year before. Now, with the tax credit gone, Hyundai is aiming to continue that sales momentum by announcing huge price cuts for the 2026 Ioniq 5, spanning nearly the entire lineup. Hyundai says the move is the result of current market dynamics and will help support increased production volume for the U.S. market. Almost every model in the Ioniq 5 lineup receives a price reduction, aside from the high-performance Ioniq 5N, for which Hyundai has yet to announce pricing. The changes lead to a massive drop in the Ioniq 5's base price, with the 2026 Ioniq 5 SE rear-wheel drive standard range now starting at just $36,600, $7,600 less than last year. Even if you upgrade to the rear-wheel drive SE with the more powerful 225-horsepower rear motor, the price still sneaks in at under $40,000, starting at $39,100. The SE all-wheel drive now starts at $42,600, down by over $9,000. Moving up the SEL trim, the rear-wheel drive version costs $41,400 for 2026, a whopping $9,800 decrease versus last year. The SEL all-wheel drive's price drops by the same amount, now starting at $44,900. At the top of the range, the limited rear-wheel drive now costs $46,675, a $9,225 reduction versus 2025. The limited all-wheel drive becomes the only Ioniq 5 to crest the $50,000 mark, but just barely at $55,75. The off-road-oriented XRT model is also $9,225 less expensive, with the 2026 model starting at $47,875. The Ioniq 5 has been among the best-selling EVs since its introduction for the 2022 model year. Between a refresh for the 2025 model year and these new price cuts, Hyundai's boxy retro-futuristic EV is among the best deals on the market. Only time will tell if these price reductions will be able to make up for the loss of the federal EV tax credit. Speaking of the Hyundai Ioniq 5, let's look at an article about the 40,000-mile update of a long-term Hyundai Ioniq 5 test. After nearly 2 years, our Ioniq 5 emerged from its testing no worse for the wear, except for one issue that was never resolved. This is written by Andrew Kroc. The 40,000-mile wrap. What a long but not very strange trip it's been. Our long-term 2023 Hyundai Ioniq 5 has finally reached the 40,000-mile point, marking the conclusion of a long-term vehicle assessment that took nearly 2 years for a variety of reasons that we will dive into below. As we wave goodbye to its wiperless rear end one more time, it's time to look back at how the Ioniq performed in our hands, what we liked and what we didn't like, and the sorts of EV-specific struggles that contributed to its lengthy stay. When we ordered the car, we decided on middle-of-the-road SEL trim, which elevated itself over the base model with niceties, such as a heated steering wheel and faux leather upholstery. We also opted to upgrade the single-motor rear-drive powertrain with dual-motor all-wheel drive. That bumped the combined output to 320 horsepower and 446 pound-feet of torque, with juice coming from a 77 kilowatt-hour battery. With a $210 set of floor mats as our sole paid option, the whole shebang ran $52,495. For context, a 2025 IONIQ 5 SEL all-wheel drive will set you back $54,700. The carpeted floor mats are now $240. And remember, according to the previous article, this car will be at least $7,800 cheaper next year. It's not uncommon for a car to get a little tired over its 40,000-mile evaluation. It's one reason why we track test our long-termers at the start and at the end of their stay. We tested the IONIQ 5 on its way out the door, and we found it no worse for the wear. The sprint to 60 miles per hour ended in 4.4 seconds, same as it did in 2023. The IONIQ 5 did lose a bit of skid pad grip, 0.84 G at the initial test, 0.80 G at the end, but we chalk that up to the 19-inch Michelin primary all-season rubber fighting the ravages of time. While the Hyundai IONIQ 5 may not be the fastest charging EV this side of the Mississippi, it proved decent at fast charging, in nice weather, at least. More on that in a bit. In our DC fast charge test, the IONIQ 5 averaged 152 kilowatts between 10 and 90% state of charge, completing the task in just under 26 minutes. That means you should get about 100 miles of range in about 13 minutes of charging, or 150 miles in about 20 minutes. Throughout the IONIQ 5's nearly two-year residency, its logbook was filled with praise for its electric powertrain. As with many other electron-fed conveyances, we enjoyed the IONIQ's instantaneous hustle and low center of gravity. An average family-friendly crossover shouldn't be this fun around a cloverleaf interchange, and yet, here we are. Of course, the powertrain was not the only part of the car to receive praise. The spacious, flat-floored interior was another highlight, offering loads of storage for things big and small. Your author appreciated the amount of tchotchke storage in the door pockets and the vast center console. But of course, it wasn't all roses and daisies in Ann Arbor. While our two Hyundai-accompanied winters were largely uneventful, if you don't count our manifold parking lot donuts on a set of Nokian Hakkapeliitta R5 EV winter tires, the charging experience wasn't great. The Hyundai's battery was quite sensitive to the cold, as evidenced by two winters of sub-200-mile range estimates. But the chargers proved even more finicky, sometimes doubling or tripling the time needed to reach a suitable state of charge. If you're lucky enough to have a home-based charging solution, then you shouldn't be left out in the cold. Ha-ha. If you're on the fence about installing a home charger, we think it's worth it. Middling cold weather performance is not for Hyundai EVs alone, but it was nevertheless a contributing factor in the IONIQ's lengthy stay. When it came to embark on a winter road trip, the thought of long nights spent at half-working DC fast chargers led many editors to prefer gas or hybrid electric transportation for longer drives. As batteries evolve and range estimates grow, and as infrastructure continues to flesh itself out, this is becoming less of an issue, but it is still a sticking point for many. Range anxiety and bad charging experiences still linger in our minds. There were a few other complaints along the way, but nothing major. Several editors disliked Hyundai's decision to put most of the controls on a finicky touch bar below the infotainment screen. Turning on the heated seats should take one press, not three. If anything, this system is more distracting than your average panoply of hard buttons. The strangest issue with our long-term IONIQ 5, though, was one that was never solved. Early in its stay, we started to hear a rattling, clunky noise from the cargo area. We thought it was just a loose charging cable bouncing around, but even after emptying the car of all loose items, the sound persisted. We took it to the dealership, and they tried to fix the issue via the manufacturer-recommended practice of manhandling the hatch lid's striker plate with a hammer and a pry bar. The noise seemed to go away for a little while, only to return with a passion. The dealer could not figure it out, and neither could we. The noise persists to this day. Beyond that problem, which we have no choice but to attribute to ghosts, the Ioniq 5 lived up to the EV promise of low regular maintenance. Our regular service tab opened at around 16,000 miles, and we paid a whopping $82 for a cabin air filter and a tire rotation. Three additional routine tire rotations over the course of our test relieved us of $30 each. And at around 30,000 miles, the dealer performed recall-related updates for the car's main control module and its integrated charging control unit, with the latter ultimately being replaced. The stop at nearly 35,000 miles, however, was the most substantial, running $356 for a flush of the battery system's low-conductivity coolant. All in, we spent $528 on maintenance. We also had to flatbed the car to the dealer at one point, but that was due to its 12-volt battery biting the dust. The dealer gave us a fresh one under warranty, and the electricals never gave us another issue. The only other costs came from the windshield wipers. Hyundai's stock units gave out pretty early, an oddly common occurrence among Korean vehicles, so we spent $78 on a set of PIAA silicone blades. One of the PIAAs decided to take flight on a road trip, so we spent an additional $64 on yet another set of blades, and as of this writing, they have not yet flown off the car in dramatic fashion. Between the positives and the negatives, the 2023 Hyundai Ioniq 5 gave us more or less what we expect from an EV over its 40,000-mile stay. Upfront service costs were low, and while the Hyundai suffered some pratfalls when the weather turned freezing, it delivered an awfully fun experience for being a family hauler. Next, from carandriver.com, the 2026 Toyota GR Supra Final Edition. Saving the best for last. The German-Japanese sports car reaches its apex just before heading out the door. This is reviewed by David Gluckman. Cars with an inherent identity crisis don't always bring up fond memories upon reflection. Not the case for the latest Toyota Supra. Capping what will be a 7-year run, the MKV Supra is set to bow out after the 2026 model year. Over that time, we have subjected it to track work at our Lightning Lap event multiple times, named it a 10 best car for 2020 and 2021, and generally had a great time over a 40,000-mile run in a long-termer. Supra 5.0 offered a 4-cylinder engine for a few years in the middle there, and as of the 2025 model year, returned to an inline-6 only menu, with your choice of a 6-speed manual or an 8-speed automatic transmission. That holds for 26, with the main edition being the final edition model at the top of the range. This is the part where we remind you that the Supra that you see was co-developed with BMW and built alongside its roundel badged platform mate in Austria. What's so remarkable about the Supra that it is more satisfying to drive than the BMW Z4 on which it's based? Toyota's version, while perfectly nice inside, leans more into sport than luxury. Its fixed roof offers a stiffer body structure, and the inline six under the hood fits with the model's history, even if it was sourced from a different automaker. Some final adjustments. The Supra has undergone near-constant tweaks over its fifth generation, most aimed at refining and improving the chassis. The final edition is no different. Larger 14.7-inch front brake rotors replace the standard 13.7-inch stoppers. There's a little more camber dialed into the suspension at both ends. Suspension bushings and the front anti-roll bar are stiffer, and a new underbody brace also adds some stiffness. The electronic dampers, power steering, and differential controls have also been reprogrammed to make reactions sharper. Oh, and there are a slew of stylistic flourishes inside and out. New aero bits, as well as two available matte paint options offered in limited numbers with the GT4 appearance pack. What better way to send off the 5th-gen Supra than by turning some laps around Sonoma Raceway? Toyota offered, and we obliged. Our time in the car was limited to a few tours of the track, and there was a 2025 model on hand for A to B comparison. Even with the brief seat time, we could feel slight but noticeable differences between Supras, new and not so new. The final edition's steering is a little more communicative and direct. The brakes haul it down with a bit more immediacy, and the computers do a better job of putting down the power out of a corner. Maybe the tweet aero addenda made a difference. Maybe it didn't. But at least they look cool. The whole car feels like the best and most focused version of itself. Lap times aside, performance numbers for the final edition should closely mirror those of the 3 and the 3 premium trims. The last manual transmission GR Supra that we tested ripped to 60 miles an hour in 3.9 seconds. We've seen auto-equipped six-cylinder Supras complete the dash to 60 in 3.7. So the auto car has that advantage, although one that we would happily skip for three pedals. The beefier brakes should improve on the standard setup's stopping distances. It needed just 147 feet to stop from 70 miles per hour in a comparison test where it bested Nissan's Z. Not the last Supra, we hope. The latest intel suggests a MKV1 Supra is on the way, and this time Toyota will go to it alone. A hybrid four-cylinder powertrain is rumored to replace the historically correct inline six. Assuming the automaker and its GR performance arm can apply lessons learned from the jointly developed MKV model, the next Supra ought to be its own kind of fun. Chances are this will be the last Supra to offer a six-cylinder, German or otherwise. If you want to freeze this special moment in time, it'll cost you almost $70,000, manual or automatic, though the standard base version is a tad more approachable at $58,695. Going for the final edition's GT4-inspired GR flair adds $2,160 to the bill. Identity crisis aside, this is one German-Japanese hybrid that we will not soon forget. Sticking with Toyota and sticking with carandriver.com, the 2026 Toyota GR86 Yuzu Edition, yellow but not mellow. Our annual reminder of just how much fun this simple rear-drive coupe can be. This is reviewed by David Gluckman. It's sometimes hard to believe the Toyota GR86 and the Subaru BRZ twins have made it this long. That this pair of cars, introduced into a market with almost nothing that resembled them, has soldiered on for over a decade is proof that there are still true enthusiasts among us. What's more, the cars continue to evolve mechanically while sprouting special editions along the way. Toyota's latest is the GR86 Yuzu Edition, which puts its best hardware in a very yellow package. Anything but mellow. For those who don't watch Top Chef or weren't paying attention to trendy restaurant menus over the last few years, yuzu is a tart Asian citrus that's often substituted for lemon. As you might have guessed, the fruit's skin is yellow. This year's GR86 Special Edition harks back to the 2015 Scion FRS release Series 1.0. The youth-oriented brand painted 1,500 FRS coupes in this hue and added a handful of TRD accessories, including lowering springs. Since then, Scion went away, and the model was renamed 86 upon joining Toyota's North American lineup. For its second generation, the car's badge was updated with the GR prefix, signifying its membership with an exclusive club of fun-to-drive Toyotas. The 2026 Yuzu Edition is based on the premium trim with the available performance pack, which includes Sachs dampers plus larger brake rotators clamped by Brembo 4-piston front and 2-piston rear calipers. It wears 18-inch matte black wheels and a body-color ducktail rear spoiler. Yellow seat perforations and stitching spruce up the interior, and there is a commemorative plaque to show your friends, but doing so requires opening the driver's door, as it's located on the blunt end of the dashboard. Like the base and the premium trims below it, the Yuzu is available with either a 6-speed manual or an optional 6-speed automatic transmission for $1,100. It's probably not a coincidence that Subaru is offering its own yellow BRZ for 2026. The paint codes are the same. Perhaps yellow is the new matte black. A dynamic dream. While our lightning lap results show the progression of this chassis over the years, one thing that we don't get at that annual Virginia International Raceway Shootout is an opportunity to drive the cars back-to-back with their predecessors. So it was somewhat of a rare opportunity recently that Toyota let us loose at Sonoma Raceway first in a 2024 GR8 with the Performance Pack and then the 2026 Yuzu Edition. The handful of laps emphasized changes made between the model years that focused on the power steering and the damper tuning. We felt more feedback through the helm in the 2026 version, an improvement on already communicative steering, and the car's reactions were more direct. The dampers also seemed a little less busy through Sonoma's many elevation changes, resulting in a smoother, easier-to-control track companion. We were reminded how well the 86 rotates, a special thing for a car with its engine up front. The car that we drove was equipped with an optional GR body kit and quad outlet exhaust. The add-on skirts, splitter, and diffuser look cool, but the effect is slightly undone by the black material at the interfaces between the body and the accessory parts. That four-cannon exhaust, however, made the flat four engine sound deliciously meaty. We enjoyed it most while following the Yuzu Edition around the track, so adding the Cat Black system can be considered a public service. Refreshingly affordable. A special edition by any other name would drive as sweet, whether you opt for the new yellow hotness or pick up last year's handsome Hakone edition, or choose a standard trim and color paired with the Performance Pack. The result is one of the most focused sports cars on the market today. These cars require some finesse to hustle, yet they reward their drivers in the process. The GR86 is the least expensive option in these dueling lineups for 2026. Bright paint or no. This Yuzu edition comes in at $37,560, while the series yellow BRZ asks for another $3,000. In terms of the minimum buy-in, the Toyota is cheaper by over $5,000, as Subaru dropped its previous base trim. Though not only have these cars stuck around, they remain attainable and interesting. In an age of crossovers and heavy EVs, we don't dare ask for more than that. Next from CarAndDriver.com, a Driven article, the 2026 Aston Martin DBXS nudges up to greatness. More power, an engaging interior, and some strategic weight savings give Aston Martin's SUV more of what it needs for a price. This is reviewed by Dan Edmonds. At first glance, the outside contours of the 2026 Aston Martin DBXS don't look all that different from those of the DBX 707 that lives beneath it in the lineup. The sheet metal's basic shape is just as drop-dead gorgeous, but subtle and smart changes to this SUV promise more sport with exactly the same utility as before. Weight reduction is a key theme, but so is increased power and intense sound from the V8 engine. That's a combination that always resonates with us, and the resultant changes make the DBX more enjoyable than before, to everyone but your financial advisor. Four key and optional changes combine to shed up to a claimed 104 pounds of mass. Up top, a carbon fiber roof panel replaces the 707's panoramic glass counterpart, a 40-pound savings that reduces the overall center of gravity. In front, a new highly faceted, more than 25,000 of them in fact, grille trims over 7 pounds off the nose. Some new aero detailing improves airflow at the same time. Similarly, alterations to the front diffuser lop 15 pounds off the tail end while swapping the quad tailpipes from a side-by-side layout to an attractive stacked design. But the last change is probably the most compelling, as the standard 23-inch forged aluminum wheels get replaced with optional magnesium ones for a cool $22,300. This saves 42 pounds, all of which is unsprung mass, bad cholesterol of curb weight. Reducing it will also have positive knock-on effects to handling and ride comfort. Indeed, our DBX-S test vehicle simply rolls over cracks that the DBX 707 would have had a small issue with. It's not magic, because certain road imperfections still get through, but the mag wheel threshold is just a little bit higher. You now tend to blame the road, not your choice of wheels. A surprising tweak was made to the steering, which feels so much more present and alive. It had a great straight-ahead sense and in-corner effort buildup that was nicely measured to start with. But there were still times when the old car seemed a wee bit slow to respond. Not anymore. The steering retains its 13.8-to-1 ratio, but is a tad quicker because the steering knuckle has been reconfigured to make the steering arm slightly shorter. A given amount of lock will now turn the wheel somewhat more, improving the effective ratio by around 5%. The same change also tightens the turning diameter by about 1.5 feet, which makes the absence of heavy and complex rear wheel steering a non-issue. In short, it is damn near perfect now. But you wanted to hear about horsepower, and here the headline number is now 717 at 6,250 RPM. That is a significant 20 horsepower increase. And we have the Valhalla hypercar, namely its turbo's larger compressor wheels, to thank for it. Torque comes in at a hefty 664 pound-feet. Aston claims that the newfound power is unlikely to affect the time that the car takes to reach 60 miles per hour, because it's all top-end power. In other words, don't expect the DBX-S to improve upon the 3.1-second sprint that we recorded in a 2023 DBX-707. But longer runs should see a benefit. How much? We expect the quarter mile to dip into the low 11-second range, with the trap speed eclipsing 122 miles per hour. The 2023 managed 11.4 and 121. To account for the extra power, the DBX's 9-speed automatic gets some mild tweaks to its shift points. As for the sound, we were never left wanting with the 707, as our last experience with it was immensely satisfying. But Aston went to work on the half-order frequencies anyway, which doesn't affect the volume per se, but it does deliver on the low-end deep-throated V8 character. The active exhaust is exhilarating in its loudest form, but its 8-cylinder roar is also controllable with a button if you'd rather not have the extra resonance all the time. Inside, our last experience with the 707 left us a little cold, but the interior of the new one is nothing short of transformative. The front and rear seats are the same, which is absolutely fine and dandy. Ditto the cargo area behind, which offers 23 cubic feet of storage. Everything else has been redone, improving the situation immensely. The starter and shifter have been moved from their odd position atop the screen to the center console, a nod to sanity. The touchscreen controls are now replicated on said console, and they no longer force a person to choose between using the cup holders and controlling the screen with a half-hidden knob of dubious design. The steering wheel now has a slimmer center pad and more straightforward spoke-mounted controls. In short, everything is far more approachable this time around. And then there is Apple CarPlay Ultra, along with a whole new underlying wiring harness to support it. Apple CarPlay Ultra is not just supporting the phone. It's the native system that controls the entirety of the touchscreen, as well as the instrument panel itself. You don't need a phone to use ACP Ultra, but it will connect to your Apple device wirelessly. Android users need not worry, because Android Auto is also supported, although it does require a wired connection. The whole thing actually comes off quite well, as the instrument panel display has numerous configuration choices that are designed by Aston Martin in concert with Apple. Our car had the outstanding Bowers & Wilkins audio system, engineered with 23 speakers and 1,600 watts of surround sound. This option will set audio files back $12,700. If you want an Aston Martin DBX-S, and you absolutely do, then you'll have to cough up over $250,000. $274,500, to be exact. Our car wore extras, such as the aforementioned 23-inch magnesium wheels and the Bowers & Wilkins stereo, and was festooned with all manner of carbon fiber trim and contrast stitching. It also came painted podium green, the same color as Aston Martin's Formula One cars, for another $10,000. All told, a car like ours costs north of $360,000. That price is getting a little out of hand, but then again, the Aston Martin DBX-S isn't exactly playing around. Next, from carandriver.com, another Driven article, the 2026 Audi Q3 adds appeal to the entry-level luxury SUV. Audi promises more power and more tech without sending the window sticker into low Earth orbit. This is reviewed by Eric Stafford. The 2026 Audi Q3's main ingredients are mostly the same as before: a single four-cylinder powertrain for the U.S., standard all-wheel drive, and a sub-$45,000 targeted base price. What's changed is that now it has better features and more power. The recently redesigned Audi Q5 is the brand's best-selling model in the United States, but last year the smaller Q3 rose to second place, despite its last major redesign dating all the way back to the 2019 model year. That means the sky's the limit for the third-generation Q3, as its substantial makeover should boost its appeal even further. Our first impression of seeing the newly styled Q3 in person is that it has a stronger presence than its predecessor. Audi hasn't yet revealed the official dimensions, but we're told the Q3 has grown in every direction, including a slightly longer wheelbase. Whereas the old version could be called blocky and squat, the new one appears smoother and longer, which aligns with other recent makeovers from across the lineup. Like those other models, the Q3 picks up a trick set of daytime running lights that can broadcast unique pixel-like patterns, and they pair with fancy OLED taillights. Audi's high-tech matrix LED headlights remain unavailable in the United States due to federal regulations. After spending some time with a Europe-spec model in Scotland, that's fine by us. During a curated nighttime highway cruise, we watched as the headlights projected blinker-like markers and blind spot warnings on the road ahead. When activated, it also permanently displayed the direction of the front wheels in the light path. Cool, yeah. Useful, maybe. But for us, it caused target fixation and felt gimmicky. Forbidden fruit is a bit of a theme with the US spec Q3. In addition to losing out on the matrix LED headlights, we also don't get the Q3's coupe-like sportback variant, the sportier SQ3 and RSQ3 models, or any of Europe's hybrid powertrain options. Instead, the stateside Q3 lineup is a party of one, limited to an enhanced version of the VW Group's venerable EA888 engine. The turbocharged 2-liter four-cylinder now produces 255 horsepower and 273 pound-feet of torque, up from 228 and 251, respectively. Audi claims that the added power gives the new Q3 the hustle to hit 60 miles an hour in 5.5 seconds, much quicker than the last version that we tested, which took 7.3. While our future instrumented test will confirm any acceleration improvements, we can say that the Q3 that we drove felt plenty peppy, with prompt initial throttle response and snappy shifts that kept the forepot on boil, especially in the sportier drive settings. Every Q3 still comes with standard all-wheel drive, but the previous generation's 8-speed torque converter automatic has been replaced with a 7-speed dual-clutch transmission. Apart from slightly lazy engagement when pulling away from stops, we didn't feel any clunkiness at low speeds. Smoothly operating the brake pedal proved trickier, as it felt like we had to apply variable foot pressure to slow and stop at an even rate. While the sage green Q3 that we drove in Scotland included a sporty S-line exterior treatment, which is coming to America, it also included adaptive dampers, which is not. We'll be stuck with passive units when the Q3 makes it over to our shores, but there are still parts of the ride and handling experience that will transfer over from our time in Scotland. We appreciated the quick steering, which provided more on-center feel than we remember in the outgoing Q3. The interior sound isolation was also a high point. You can thank the new acoustically laminated front windows for that. Inside, Audi has moved on from the virtual cockpit and is stepping onto the digital stage, the name for its new dual-display giant rising from the dashboard. Curved bezel houses an 11.9-inch digital gauge cluster and a 12.8-inch touchscreen. The latter provides a hub for the Android-based operating system, which means there are plenty of apps on offer from Google and other parties. The infotainment system itself is a user-friendly layout with large icons that are easy to select, along with an AI-enhanced voice assistant and a Sonos-branded sound system. Every Q3 includes a wireless charging pad and the usual smartphone mirroring duo of Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. Interestingly, Audi says that it will not offer the S-Line interior on the US version, even though we're getting the S-Line exterior. That means making do without sporty front buckets and having to look at wood trim instead of aluminum. Still, the Q3 provides a pleasant driving position, and there's room for two adults to comfortably occupy the back seats. We're still waiting on Audi to share specific dimensions, but we're told the passenger space between the new and old models is virtually identical. Quite the interesting factoid, considering the vehicle's exterior dimensions have grown universally. We're also not sure how we feel about the brand's newfangled column shifter assembly. We hope that the Q3 is your only car because you'll be relearning how to change gears, turn on your blinkers, and operate the windshield wipers. All those functions are now combined in a single unit mounted on top of the steering column. We appreciate that the unusual design freed up space on the center console. Those big gulps have to go somewhere. But there is a learning curve. Thankfully, most of the basics stay true. Changing gears happens on the right side of the column, the signals and the wipers on the left. We'll be able to formalize our opinion on the one-stop stock after we spend more time with the US spec Q3, which should appear on our side of the pond early next year. Final pricing is yet to be finalized, but Audi is aiming for a starting price in the low $40,000 range. Its aggressive price and myriad improvements should make Audi's entry-level SUV a formidable competitor to rival luxury subcompact SUVs such as the BMW X1 and the Volvo XC40. Next, from carandriver.com, Faraday Future Prototype Explodes, Damages Startup's Headquarters. Faraday Future says the fire was not caused by the battery, but the damage was enough to make the building dangerous to reoccupy. This is written by Caleb Miller. Three bullet points at the start of the article. A Faraday Future prototype at the startup automaker's Los Angeles headquarters caught fire Sunday morning and exploded. The blast damaged the building, leading the fire department to mark it unsafe to re-enter until structural work was done to reinforce it. Faraday Future said the prototype's battery was not the cause, and thankfully, no injuries were reported. Faraday Future has had an unusual history since first unveiling its FF91 electric SUV back in 2016. The company has been plagued with financial troubles, has only produced the FF91 in limited quantities since 2023 and delivered them to B-list celebrities, and is now pivoting to rebadged Chinese minivans with a giant screen in place of a grill. Now, an old prototype at the automaker's Los Angeles headquarters caught fire Sunday morning, causing an explosion that destroyed part of the building, as reported by TechCrunch. The fire was reported to the Los Angeles Fire Department at 4:37 a.m., and the fire was put out within 40 minutes, with no injuries reported. However, the explosion damaged the building that housed the prototype, a small two-story building next to the main headquarters. The Los Angeles Department of Building and Safety deemed the damage bad enough to red tag the structure, meaning it will require construction work before people can safely re-enter. In a statement posted to social media, Faraday Future referred to the prototype as an FF91 show vehicle and said the building's wall surfaces sustained minor damage while all the windows remained intact. Faraday Future said that it is investigating the cause of the fire, but stated that there was no evidence that the battery pack was the cause of the fire or the explosion for now. The company claims possible causes are, quote, an electrical short circuit in the showroom wiring or a short circuit related to a loose connection in the vehicle's 12-volt low-voltage system, unquote. Since the prototype was one of the earliest FF91 test vehicles, Faraday Future says the interior materials did not meet the flammability standards of the company's production vehicles, so the company says a recall of its production vehicles is unlikely. The situation is made more complex by the fact that the Faraday Future sold its headquarters in 2019, the same year that the company's founder filed for personal bankruptcy and stepped down from his role as CEO. Since then, Faraday Future has leased the property but was sued by its landlord, Rexford Industrial, in February of 2021 due to late payments. The suit was settled in April, and at the time, the lease was set to expire by the end of September of 2025. The property is currently listed as available by commercial real estate company CBRE, and a Faraday Future representative told TechCrunch that he was, quote, unsure of the current status of Faraday Future's lease, unquote. Next, from carandriver.com, Lamborghini executive hints at future off-road Revuelto. Following the success of the Huracan Sterrato, Lamborghini is considering building more special editions using the rest of its lineup. This is written by Jack Fitzgerald. Three bullet points at the beginning of the article. Lamborghini could be working on an off-road version of the Revuelto and the Temerario, according to a new report from Autocar. Federico Forchini, Lamborghini's sales and marketing chief, said the brand is planning crazier new updates following the success of the Huracan Sterrato. The Italian marquee is also looking to increase customization without ramping up sales figures in an effort to maintain exclusivity. With the Huracan on its way out the door and the Revuelto arriving as the brand's new V12 offering, Lamborghini sold more cars in 2024 than it had in any other year since the automaker was founded some six decades ago. Now, according to a new interview with Autocar, Lamborghini is on the hunt for fresh ways to excite customers without increasing sales figures by too much. Speaking to the outlet, Federico Forchini, Lamborghini's head of sales and marketing, said that the company is planning crazier new models in the wake of the Huracan Sterrato's success. I think that we even didn't leverage enough on the opportunity because you can do a lot of stuff with the Sterrato, and I think that in the future, for sure, we can introduce, at a certain moment in time, this opportunity, Forchini said. All but confirming the return of the Sterrato badge, Forchini told Autocar, "We know that this is ready. The market is there. The only hurdle," he said, "is that we have to execute it." Forchini implied that, rather than just sticking with a Sterrato version of the Temerario, the Huracan's replacement, we can expect limited editions of both the Urus and the Revuelto. Beyond just new derivatives of each model that it sells, Forchini said that the brand is always looking for crazy things in all dimensions. In that vein, Lamborghini is continuing to increase the customizability of its cars in an attempt to increase profitability without also increasing sales. "We want to keep the exclusivity," Forchini explained. One way the automaker is managing that balance is through a new paint shop that has increased the number of available colors for the Temerario and the Revuelto to around 400. And with that, we have reached the end of this edition of Bumper to Bumper. I have been your reader, J.J. Fabini, with the Audio Reading Service, part of the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Until next time, keep the rubber on the road and have a great week.